Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hello, happy Saturday. Welcome back into the Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week podcast. I'm host and audio producer of the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, Steven Serta. Hope everyone is enjoying their extended 4th of July weekend, but we still got plenty of stuff to get you caught up on here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. Going to start today's show off with Out of Structure. Ron and Staggs posed a question to the audience this week about which wide receiver you'd like to see have a big 2022 season, Mecole Hardman or Juju Smith-Schuster. After that, we're going to catch up with Sho and BK. The guys discussed how the Chiefs roster might be lacking in some superstar talent that we've seen from them in the past. That just means that Chiefs general manager Brett Veach is going to have to hit on these draft picks, and that means that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are going to have to be even more special than they already are in the upcoming season. After that, we'll take a quick timeout, and then when we get back, we're going to finish things up with an interview I had earlier in the week. I sat down with Cincinnati Bearcats co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach Colin Hitchler to discuss new Chiefs safety Brian Cook and get to know the new Chiefs player. That's all coming up on today's Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week.
Thanks for sticking with us on the Out of Structure podcast. We're back with Ron's answer to my would you rather Juju or Mecole be a top 10 player on this team by the end of 2022?
I mean, I don't think it's a question, man. I think you got to have Mecole, or you'd want to have Mecole if you're preferring which one, just because if he does become that impactful of a player, it means he unlocked what we all kind of hoped he always would be. That speed is something that you just can't replicate. I do think Juju has a little bit more of a replicable skill set, right? Just you can find guys that maybe do a little bit of what he does. It's more popular to be that bigger power slot type of guy that can still do a lot of the quick stuff too. If Mecole turns it on though and becomes that really impactful player, man, that speed is something you cannot replace. That's why I got to go Mecole.
Well, part of the reason I asked this question is because both are essentially in contract seasons this year. Right. Who do you think would be easier to re-sign in this scenario that they became an impactful player? We've talked a lot about most people agree that Mecole Hardman is not re-signing with this team. If he has a great year, he's going to price himself out. If he has a bad year, they have no reason to bring him back. I don't know that I totally agree with that. I think there's a lot of reasons why Andy Reid and company actually really like what Mecole brings and would like to bring him back. Juju, they've been trying to get for 2 years. You know, I hope that it's not just a 1 year and done thing with him, but It'd be interesting to see, you know, let's give him 1,000-yard season, you know, 5-6 touchdowns for each of these guys. Do you think they could re-sign either one of them in that scenario?
Man, that is a good point, man. I mean, I don't think both are happening, right? I mean, you can't think that.
No, absolutely not.
Exactly. And so you have to say kind of either or. I think just because Juju has been in the league longer and has kind of already had those chances to be signed, I think even if he has a good year, there's only a certain limit he can be signed to, right? Because I think teams have already kind of shown their hand on what they think of him to an extent, because he was injured last year. So I think that does play into how he was handled in free agency this year. But Mecole, if he has that going off year, you know, it's so easy to sell. Hey, look, finally Tyreek's gone. He just had to step up, and now he's the guy that you all thought he was supposed to be. It's so easy to sell that if you're the agent, right? Like, hey, look, he was just behind Tyreek the first 3 years. Now you're seeing what he looks like without a guy next to him. This is who he is. So, yeah, Mecole is probably going to get a ton of money if he has a really good year, I would imagine.
Who's the bigger name in the league right now? I think Chiefs fans we've talked about before how we think that Mecole is almost underrated at this point amongst Chiefs fans, where fans of other teams see him and say, man, that's a dynamic player
right,
needs a chance to pop. Juju is a guy who was hot for a while and kind of sort of a forgotten guy in the league, at least in my sense. I'm not sure which one has a better reputation right now.
The reputation thing, it's interesting because I think Juju is a very well-known name because he puts himself out there and is a social media personality. But at the same time, you know, when you talk about reputation, I think a lot of people get this negative connotation with him because of that stuff, because of dancing on the logo before a game. And even though it might be silly, I do think, you know, I that plays into it. And just the fact that we haven't seen him be as very good since he was with Antonio Brown and Pittsburgh's offense was really good. But that also plays into how he could explode here because he finally plays with a team that has an actual quarterback and not what podcast always calls him a water buffalo, but someone kept calling him a water. I think it was shout out PFF forecast. I think that's who it
that,
is. But.
That's hilarious. I liked going with his standby, the corpse of Ben Roethlisberger. You know, I think that's always a good way to put it. Well, tell you what, speaking of wide receivers, Ron's now famous segment, the remix, talking about Andy Reid's offense, all different wrinkles, all X's and O's. Let's get into that segment now. Let's talk a little bit about the piece that you have out on Arrowhead Pride this week, talking about wide receivers in a lot of ways. So I'll let you go ahead and introduce that and give us sort of the footnotes or the cliff notes on your remix piece this week.
Remix. Reid remix.
Anyways, with that, time's yours.
Absolutely, yeah. Check out. It's a weekly piece for the summer. I'm always talking about the offense. And this week, I want to talk about the new receivers, the receivers we have not seen in this offense yet. And I went one by one, MVS, Juju, and Sky Moore. And the thing I wanted to point out was just some common play concepts the Chiefs use and how these guys fit into them. So for MVS specifically, you know, he's a speed guy. He's a guy that had that 4.37 speed, right? You lose Tyreek. That was something the Chiefs always excelled with, was having those two speed guys and kind of being able to interchange them between Tyreek and McColl on certain pass combinations. And the drive pass concept is one that uses speed a lot and is one that the Chiefs love to use. So it's basically two middle of the field routes, one a shallow crosser, one an intermediate crosser. Kelce is usually the intermediate crosser, right? Well, that shallow crosser needs to be someone fast. And so that's where it's an easy route for someone like McColl or Tyreek to run. You know, you're just catching the ball very quickly and turning upfield, right? Getting into open space. The other fast guy in that formation would be running a deep pattern to kind of open up that space, right? Take the safeties deep, open up that space. And so McColl and Tyreek were always those two guys interchangeably. Now you have MVS with McColl doing it. And I do think that deep pattern, that deep post of that play, the example I put on Twitter and Stags, you noticed this too, is McColl's running that deep post trying to clear out. Well, he can't get off the coverage. And it actually does draw a flag, but he's not physical enough to get off the coverage. I think this is where MVS can even increase that potential because he is going to be able to get off press. He's going to be able to work through physical coverage a lot better. And I he's also very fast. So I do think he could play that shallow crosser too, but also be a good on the post. So all that to say, the speed that MVS brings is still going to be able to be utilized in some of the core stuff Andy Reid uses. And then honestly, in some of that deep stuff, playing off physical coverage, it could be even better than what we saw last year.
And really, it's about letting these receivers do what they do best. Mm-hmm. And in that particular formation, that particular play that you showed, if MVS has taken McColl's spot, McColl has taken Tyreek's spot in that formation, right? So now McColl does what we've seen McColl do, take that short pass in stride, turn it upfield, and go. And MVS is playing the clear out role, and he's able to beat the press coverage and to get deep, draw some attention, open up the spacing. So I do think that there's a real opportunity there for McColl to do more of that specific slice of Tyreek Hill's job description that he is best at doing. And in other scenarios, you're going to have MVS doing a slice of Tyreek Hill's work, but doing it in a different way. On that particular play and that particular route combination, like I said, though, you can really easily see MVS being the clear out guy, McColl being the shallow route there, and you've got an opportunity for that route concept to be, like you said, even more effective.
Yeah, exactly. And the other part of this too, the other part of my article was Juju Smith-Schuster, how he can fit in. You know, it's kind of a similar thing where it's just going to be an improvement over. So I compared Juju Smith-Schuster specifically to Byron Pringle's role last year, just because I do think they're similar style players in terms of those bigger built receivers. Juju, in my opinion, is a much better receiver. And one way you can see that is the Chiefs Hank concept. So H-A-N-K, Hank. It's a traditional West Coast concept. It's very simple. It's a lot of the receivers running deep curls, right? So not hitch routes, 5 to 7 yards, more closer to 8 to 10 yards, more intermediate curls. And basically it's best against zone coverage because you're just trying to find throwing windows for the quarterback to find you. And I do think one thing that I think Pringle and Robinson both struggled at last year was just preciseness of routes, running exactly where they needed to be, hitting their landmarks. And one specific play I tweeted out on this Hank concept, Pringle runs that deep curl on a third down. Well, he runs it short of the sticks. So he catches it short of the sticks. And it's like a 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10. You don't run that route to a certain yardage. You run that route to where it needs to go, and it's past the sticks. And so Pringle just got lucky, broke a tackle and got the first down anyway. But I really do think Juju will be a lot more precise and just better hands. Byron Pringle dropped a lot of passes last year. We talk about, you know, maybe Tyreek having some bad hands at times. But so did Byron Pringle. And Juju Smith-Schuster has a career drop rate, I believe, roughly 5%. Byron Pringle's last year was either 12%, 10 to 12%. So yeah, all that to say, in those tight windows, in those, you know, when you need just a first down and it's a stationary target, I think Juju will be a lot better at being able to get open for Mahomes, precisely being where he needs to be, but also securing the pass once it gets to him. Right. So I think Juju is much of an improvement on those, tight window throws compared to what Mahomes had last year.
There's not a damn thing going on. So, we have to be really good at this and manufacture topics. And luckily, this is why Pete Sweeney partnered with us, because no one on this show is working for him. He partnered with us to come together because of our talents in this. And I'm looking at ESPN. As they know, they're trying to fill content as well. They rank the top 32 most talented teams. And listen, there's some teams in certain spots that we could be here all day, but I will not go down that rabbit hole, because we will never dig ourselves out if we start arguing about some of these teams that they have rated. But they have the Chiefs at 9. The Chiefs at 9, the back half of the top 10. I would say probably since Patrick Mahomes became Patrick Mahomes to the world, the Chiefs have never been viewed this low, I'd imagine. But they are 9, and the importance to this, them being 9, and tell me if I'm wrong, fellas, Buffalo was 1, the LA Chargers in the division are 3, which you could argue are two of the most talented teams in the AFC, and I tend to agree. And Cleveland, if it's not Jacoby Brissett, is 6th in this ranking, and then the Cincinnati Bengals, who beat you in your own field. Because you got drunk in the second half and took a dump over the field. They are 8th. So there's 4 teams in the AFC that many people look at and believe have a more talented roster than the Chiefs. And I'll be honest, fellas, I don't think I argue that. Maybe you could say a few things, maybe with the Bengals, but I most definitely think roster to roster, those top 3 teams, I think the Browns, I think the Chargers, I think the Bills are more talented. And I'm going to be honest with you, I think Denver overall may be more talented than the Chiefs, who they have listed at 14. Just me personally, when I look at what they can bring to the table. But those 3 especially, and I think Cincinnati, you could argue either way. But when I look at that, and I see where the Chiefs are, they have definitely dropped in talent. And I'm intrigued by this because it's really going to test one of my theories. Maybe my number one theory in football is college, NFL. I always look, all right, who's got the best quarterback and the coach? I think those are the two most important things on the field to me, quarterback and coach. And even though I think the Chiefs, as we see, are 9th and fairly behind these other 3 or 4 AFC teams, I still think they have the best coach quarterback combination in Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. How much can they make up for the talent deficit that they have? And I think that's going to be the interesting thing to watch this year for the Chiefs, is how much can Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes make up for the talent? I've watched Andy Reid do it with lesser quarterbacks. I've watched Andy Reid make up talent disparities with him and Donovan McNabb over other teams in the NFC. I watched him do it, and you all have watched him do it with Alex Smith, make up the talent deficit with other teams. I think this is maybe his greatest task ever, because Buffalo is no joke. The Chargers are no joke. The Browns, if they are not playing with Jacoby Brissett, they are no joke. It feels like to me, and maybe you guys disagree, that they're going to have to make up for the talent that they lack or they are behind on these other teams.
No, I think it's a test of three people. I think it really is. It comes down to, as you mentioned, Andy Reid, who's going to have to scheme things up in a way that he frankly didn't have to in previous years. Like, you look back to the Kareem Hunt year where it was Kareem, you had on the outside Tyreek Hill, and then Travis Kelce, of course, at tight end. That's as good as it gets in the NFL. Like, then, now, anything in between, that's unbelievable. You look to what it was when they had Sammy Watkins healthy. Say what you will about Sammy, he's a super talented number two wide receiver, and we've got him, and he's paired with guys like Tyreek and Travis. It's pretty damn good. Now you're going to have something that's different, and you don't have that legitimate number one wide receiver the way they did with Tyreek Hill. So Andy is going to be tested. On top of that, Patrick's going to be tested. He's never played with wide receivers like this. They're just different. No. It's a different accumulation of talent on the outside. So he's going to be tested. And I think the third guy that they're putting a lot of pressure on here is Brett Veach, because Brett Veach had to go out this offseason. He had more draft capital than he ever has by a wide margin this year. And it seems like everybody believes he drafted well. Well, those guys are going to be tested quickly. George Karlaftis might be a week one starter for you. You look at what you've got at linebacker, you may have a week one starter there that was drafted later on. Your cornerback on the outside, probably a week one starter. Justin Reed, he signed this offseason, week one starter for you. The wide receiver and running back tandem that might be there for you, all his signings. Like, he is going to be tested in a huge way. Was he right in these evaluations? Because he let a lot of people go. They could have easily just said, you know what, Tyreek, we'll give you all of the money. You know what? We like what we have right now with Tyrann Mathieu. He's been a leader of our defense for years. We really believe that he can regain that form that he had a couple of years ago. We're going to re-sign him. We're going to go out there, and instead of trusting our drafting ability, we're just going to make a big splash move the way that they have many times before and bring in another veteran, whether it be on the offensive line or at wide receiver or wherever. They didn't do that this year. So I think the guy that they probably doesn't get talked about enough that's going to be tested this year, it's a massive year to be tested for Brett Veach. And I think that's the guy that really I'm going to be honing in on.
Yeah. His moves are, George can't be Breland Speaks. He's got to, these moves they've made. You're right. This is
his team now. No longer is this Dorsey's team.
When you look at it, is this is a team, and I don't care what you say. We've had disagreements on this, especially with Serta. That this isn't we're trying to seriously attack and win a Super Bowl. When you have Patrick Mahomes at this age, you're trying to win a Super Bowl. Like, this is like LeBron James is on your team in his prime. You're trying to win a championship every single year. There's no step backs. And you could argue when you're in that mode, generally you're playing for let's get replaceable parts immediately that we know what they're going to be. Instead, they're trying to pull off what the Warriors did, and that is win today and plan for the future and win for today and tomorrow. And listen, if it works, it is big time, because now you've extended this window or even turned the corner and opened it in a different way. But yeah, Brett Veach, those guys, like, they have to be. And I guess just listening to you, it makes me think this. All three of them have to be difference makers in a way that they didn't have to be before, right? Like Brett Veach has to be a difference maker because the talent isn't there to pick you up Andy Reid has to be more of a like a difference maker like he was in Philly or when Alex was here in a way that he maybe didn't have to because, hell, it was easy. And Mahomes has to be a difference maker in a way that he hadn't been before because it's getting harder and harder the way teams are defending you. And now 10 isn't there that can just that can make life easier, make coverage easier to read because you know what teams are going to do because they have to allocate a certain amount of defenders to 10. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to have to be difference makers in ways they've never been before. That's a fun thing to look at, though.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm really excited for this season. And I've mentioned it. I think me and BK even talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Like, I think we are going to get the best of Andy. Like, I think that Andy was getting too comfortable and it was too easy to just simply rely on Mahomes, Hill, and Kelsey all the time to get things done. And so I think we're going to see more creative Andy. I think we're going to see Pat a little bit looser this season than we saw him at times last year, where it seemed like he felt like he had to carry the entire team on his back all the time. And that kind of weighs on you, like, oh, for an entire NFL season. That takes a lot out of you as a player. And everything that he was going on just like in his personal life, like it was perfectly reasonable for Patrick Mahomes to just be tired and worn out last season. And I think there just was some of that. But I think we are going to see the best versions of that. And as far as Veach goes, like I was talking to some of the guys here at AP about this draft class and the expectations for this draft class, because amongst Chiefs fans, it's very, very high. Like you're thinking that you got 5-6 guys that can potentially contribute on this roster in some way. And I was like, yeah, it's hard to project that. Like you just don't see very many draft classes where teams wind up doing that. And I think it was the 2017 Saints that did it. Like they had an insanely impressive draft class. I was talking to some of the guys at AP about it, and they were like, well, the difference there is Saints had a bunch of top 100 draft picks, and that's what the Chiefs had in this draft. They had a bunch of top 100 draft picks where, you know, the value's higher on those guys, and they accumulated a lot of those picks in the top 100. And so they just wanted as many darts as they could fire at the board and hope that those hit. And the higher they are up in the draft, obviously, the higher likelihood that they will hit.
Yeah.
Ramchick and Kamara and Marshawn Lattimore, I think. So if you look at it, like the similarities there are not hard to find either, because you look at what the Chiefs needed this year. Like Ramchick is basically your version of Karloftis. Kamara is your version of Sky Moore. And then you could go one for one with the cornerback position of Marshawn Lattimore and what you got in this year in the first round.
Yeah, it's interesting. Of the three, if we're adding Veach in there too, like he is the one that I have the least amount of confidence in, which, I mean, it's not a surprise, but not, and it's more or less of what he got, because I can see all of these guys being solid. I don't know how many immediate like difference makers there are, right? Like I wasn't in New Orleans, so I didn't know what you thought about Lattimore or whatever. He was in the top 10 or close to it. So, I mean, you had some expectations, but I don't know if they got a player like that. I think they got guys that are going to contribute. I'm not sure if they pick now. If one of them turns into a difference-making type player this year, and that doesn't mean one of them. I'm saying one of them turns into Tyreek Hill or Tyrann Mathieu or something like that. But I'm just saying a person that is a playmaker or of some sorts that adds to this team in a major way that's beyond just solid. And that's the only part. It's not really necessarily Brett, because, I mean, he's had some success in the draft. But I just, like, when I look at there's no flash where I'm like, damn, okay. And I guess Sky Moore would be the closest. But, like, there's no flash where, like, when I look at the corner, like, out of Washington, I don't think, like, you know, that, you know, this.
He's Marcus not Marcus Peters. Peters. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. He's not a guy that had solid a bunch player. Of ball production.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, but they have to make up for that talent disparity with the Bills, with the Browns, with the Chargers, with the Bengals. in the AFC themselves. And one and the three things that, that we're looking at here is Mahomes and the and Andy, and obviously Veach with the depth of the roster has to together make up for that.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hello, welcome back into the Arrowhead Pride interview series. I am Steven Serta. Continuing our Chiefs draft pick preview, we are very happy to be joined by co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach for the Cincinnati Bearcats, Colin Hitchler. Colin, how are we doing today? We really appreciate you joining the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network.
Great. Thank you for having me on, and excited to be a part of it.
We're really excited to chat with you, and you know, obviously, your guys' program at Cincinnati is coming off an incredible season where you guys saw multiple guys go in the NFL draft, and one of those guys was safety Brian Cook, who you had the pleasure of coaching at Cincinnati. And Chiefs fans are excited about Brian Cook because their secondary's kind of gone through an overhaul this offseason where we saw a staple and all-pro caliber player in Tyrann Mathieu hit the free agent market. He's no longer a Kansas City Chief. And so there's been some question marks there in the secondary. So, Colin, if you could tell us one thing that Chiefs fans need to know about Brian Cook before they get an opportunity to see him on the football field, what would that be?
Well, one, I'd say he's a great person. Before you even talk about football, he's a leader, a well-rounded young man who's been successful on and off the field. I mean, he was a academic All-American. He's a kid that was voted captain by his teammates, even though he had never truly been the starter until this year. And that was a team that had 9 draft picks. So somebody that was considered a leader, even though he had less playing time than a lot of the guys that were returning. And he's a person of high character that's just a worker. He's outworked everybody his whole life, and he'll continue to put in the work on and off the field to be successful.
Yeah. So when I was kind of doing some research on Brian and after the Chiefs drafted him, I think the thing that stood out most to Chiefs fans was Brian likes to hit people. It seems like Brian likes to go out there and he likes to make big plays in the secondary, but he especially likes to, lay big hits on opposing players. Is that something that you feel like, is that something that like Brian that jumps out about his style of play? Is that something that you notice like immediately when you see him take the football field?
You know, it's awesome to hear you say that, because Brian was when he came to our program, he was a corner at Howard University. So, this is a kid that was thin, smaller framed, kid coming out of high school that really only had one offer, and it was Howard close to signing day, and grew from an FCS corner into a big time All-American level safety, and changed his body through the development of our weight room program and Coach Collins, Brady Collins, our strength coach, and turned himself into a physical specimen that was obviously evaluated highly by the NFL scouts, but his style of play also became this physical, tough, hard-nosed mentality. I think he would put a lot of pride into that, you know, as a Cincinnati football player, and what that means to be a high school kid that developed in the city of Cincinnati and grew up playing park ball around here, because it is a blue-collar city of fitness. Similar to Kansas City in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're entering your third straight year as the Cincinnati Bearcats safeties coach, and you mentioned mm-hmm. that he had to transition from playing cornerback to playing safety for you guys. So that wasn't like a day one development, right? Like him getting drafted to the NFL as a safety, like this is something he had to work really hard at to kind of wind up excelling enough at the position to kind of wow some NFL scouts and eventually get drafted in the second round by the Chiefs.
Yeah. So he was in a really good situation in that he had Derek Forrest and James Wigan, who were fifth and seventh round picks respectively the year before him. So they really pushed him and elevated his level of training and his expectations of what, you know, he could be more than anything, because he's always been a hard worker. But to run against those guys daily in drills and to be pushed in the weight room and see, you know, what he could turn his body into, and credit to him, he surpassed any expectation that I think anybody in this program had to be what he became. And you know, that's all credit to his work ethic and his character as a person. But yeah, he's a kid that's also developed a love of the position of safety. And I think what stands out, the first word I would use to describe him as a player, is versatile. You know, a lot of safeties who are former corners, you think they're more cover safeties, but he's as comfortable in the box. He can blitz off the edge. He can play the post. He can cover man. And, you know, what I think his greatest strength is his versatility and his lack of weaknesses.
And, you know, you've mentioned his work ethic and his personality as a player. But is there something specific you could point to about Brian that, you know, helps him on the football field? Like, you know, we're transitioning here with the Kansas City Chiefs from Tyrann Mathieu, who was a very vocal leader on the football field and really commanded a lot of respect. And then we've had some other safeties in the building who have even said, like, oh, no, we kind of just stayed quiet and just tried to play and make plays, because Tyrann was the guy who kind of chirped at everybody. Like, is Brian out there kind of, you know, commanding things, or is
Brian
he more
is a very confident kid who is going to put he's a grown man playing college football last year. And he was coming in the building at 7 a.m. and leaving at 6 p.m. And he watched more film than half the staff. So he's, you know, addicted to the game. And because of that, he knew everything that was going to happen before it happened. And he is not shy about being vocal and making sure his teammates know it. I think if you go back and watch the Georgia game 2 years ago, we're in the Peach Bowl. That's his first career start, and he leads the team in tackles. But more than that, the demand he showed on the field for a first game starter in a bowl game, and he's controlling the whole back end and pointing out plays and pulling the trigger on some crack tosses and stuff where he recognized it off his film study. And you'll see it quickly in preseason. He'll be out there recognizing formations and motions, and he is not scared to vocalize that.
Yeah, I think Chiefs fans absolutely love hearing that from you, Colin. You know, especially when, you know, they brought in Justin Reed, they still have Juan Thornhill. But something that Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo has done a little bit more than other defensive coordinators over the last couple of years is he likes to utilize these three safety looks, because he likes his safeties who can play up in the box and play around the line of scrimmage. Then he likes guys who can play all over the field and play in coverage. Do you think that as far as Brian's game goes, like, and we've already talked about what a big hitter he can be and physical, do you see him as being kind of that line of scrimmage safety or somebody that they can put in the secondary who can go sideline to sideline?
I think he that's the versatility that he brings. I mean, he's played nickel in big games in the past when we had those two safeties and, you know, people were getting in bigger personnels. We were putting him in at nickel, or really what some people might argue is a Sam linebacker. He's got the corner background, so he's very comfortable out in space covering. But his versatility and ability to fit the box, his understanding of schemes and X's and O's allows him to be a movable piece. And, you know, I'd have all expectations that he would be able to be versatile enough to move to that box safety, that third safety, that Buffalo nickel or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, we're all very excited to see Brian take the field. And they did just announce that the Kansas City Chiefs rookies are going to report on July 22nd. So fans will have that opportunity here in the near future to see him take the field. Last thing before I let you go, Colin. And I know coaches don't love getting into the comparison game, but for the Kansas City Chiefs fans, I think people would be upset if I didn't ask you. If you had to compare him to one NFL safety, like, is there a particular player that comes to mind or that reminds you of Brian?
No, I think what makes Brian unique is he takes different pieces from different games. It's really hard for me to put that in my mind exactly, you know, who he would be. There's a lot of, you know, in an ideal world, if his career pans out like I hope it does, you know, Brian Dawkins was the guy that I always watched in Philly growing up, and obviously Coach Reed had him under him. You know, that would be the dream that I think he could become, just a physical leader, toughness, control the whole back end. But, you know, he's got a lot of work to put in before anything of that type.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll see some big-time flashes from him as soon as we get to see him on the football field up in St. Joseph, Missouri, once they start training camp. But again, Colin Hitchler, co-defensive coordinator of the Cincinnati Bearcats, as well as safeties coach. Colin, we appreciate you joining us so much. We really appreciate the time.
It. And I just want a quick shout-out to Ryan Nutt and Pat Perduto. Those guys did an unbelievable job with the Kansas City Chiefs scouting department. And, you know, a lot of credit to them for finding Brian and putting the work in, and we're very excited to watch him, and really, really excited for the Chiefs organization to, in my opinion, outwork some of the other teams in the league to find him.
Yeah, I was told that they were very excited when they were able to take him in the second round. But again, thank you, Colin. We wish you and your program there at Cincinnati nothing but luck in the upcoming season.
Thank you so much. Have a great time. Go Chiefs.